Thank you very much, everybody, for coming to our monthly webinar. This month's topic is Senior Housing in Your IRA, an expert introduction for investors. As a brief disclaimer that we have to give before we start this transaction or to start this discussion, the Entrust Group does not provide any investment advice or endorse any specific products. Any information presented today is for educational purposes only, and all parties are encouraged to discuss with their financial and legal advisors before entering into any type of investment. Here's a couple of the items that we're just going to go over today, and if you have any further questions during the transaction or during the presentation, please feel free to go ahead and type those into the chat box. We will be just having a Q&A discussion at the end of everything so you can get more details about the information if you need it. As a brief introduction for myself, my name is Jacob Marchini. I've been here at the Entrust Group for over 9 years, and I am CISP certified, meaning I have a certified IRA services professional designation from the Bankers Association of America. Some general information about the Entrust Group for those of you who are joining us today. We are self-directed IRA administrators, meaning we help our clients invest in private equity, real estate, precious metals, and other types of what we call alternative assets. We're very proud of our knowledgeable staff, many of them of whom have the same sort of CISP certifications that I do. And we hold monthly webinars like this for the benefit of our clients. More general information about the Entrust Group. We have over $5 billion of assets under management across 24,000 plus investors. We've been in the industry for over 40 years since 1980, and we offer a single point of contact for our new clients. So if you have any interest in joining up with us today as a new client, then you will have a single point of contact as your main contact with us to provide personalized service to you for getting things started. All right, and without further ado, I'm going to turn things over to our presenters today, Mr. Jim Flint and Vern Harris.
Well, thank everybody for joining today, and we look forward to hopefully adding some information so you understand further about investing in the senior housing market. Brief introduction, I've been in the real estate business for 40 years. I formed partnerships on a variety of properties, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and more recently, in the last 10 years, 10 or 15 years, we've been doing partnerships on assisted living properties. The reason I wanted to have my investors look at and invest in senior housing is pretty simple. The demographics favor this segment of the population growing at a faster rate than any other segment of the population. So having real estate that fits those needs for those future clients and residents is what we're interested in. Vern, would you like to say a few words?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Vern Harris with the Better Way Realty and ABW Senior Investments. I've been a business owner for over 35 years and have been involved in the assisted living space now for over 10 years. I am a certified senior housing investment professional and also a certified business intermediary. And I started an association about 8 years ago called the Denver Association of Assisted Living Residences. We've got probably 1,200 members in our total meetup group. And I've been with ABW since 2018.
Okay, and we can go on to the next slide. So so the important part here is you want to buy real estate that's in demand now and likely to be in demand in the future. And the 80 plus population segment is predicted to grow at a 4.6% annual growth rate. Overall, they're at about 87% occupancy on all the assisted living properties across the nation. And there's 43,000 people for annual need. Go to the next slide. So So this is our basic idea about why we're doing what we're doing. We're seeing that the demand is increasing because of the population and the demographics, and we feel that we can find the property that fills that kind of a need, and in the locations. And then, like any kind of real estate or business, you have to have an adequate operator or manager to operate the property. We do that by two different methods. We find the property, match up a operator, and they do a triple net lease on the building. So we're not subject to variations of occupancy, taxes, insurance, upkeep, things like that. These are true triple net leases where the operator or our tenant manages and takes care of all those problems and send us a rent check. And the only thing we pay out of that would be our management fee for supervising and making sure that they're complying with all the state regulations and the mortgage payment, and that the balance goes to the partners. The other way that we're exploring to do this to get into other markets besides Colorado, where we currently have 42 homes several hundred beds operating under this kind of operation. But we want to change to also add having professional managers that have experience in different cities that we're interested in investing in. Obviously, the cities that we want to invest in are areas that the retirees are retiring in that have the most growth of any other city in that 65 plus age bracket. So, we think it's a good idea to invest in real estate where the demand is increasing. Vern, do you have some comments?
Oh, I think you've outlined it pretty well. Again, the opportunity to step into the operations is a pretty big jump in what the ROIs end up being. So that's something we're exploring pretty hard right now.
Okay. So in the senior housing segment, there are these four basic categories: independent living, where you're providing housing for people that are probably still driving and just don't want to live alone and do not have family members nearby to look after them. And they want to be part of a community of like-minded people. And so they'll live in a small one-bedroom apartment kind of arrangement, but food and other activities are available a short distance away. When they need to have more care, that would be the assisted living. And typically, when they need help with two or three of activities of daily living. So these are the typical kind of retirement home that we think of. Some of these are independent and they are standalone buildings. The independent living may be also standalone or part of a large complex to have continuing care. Then the next level of care that people usually need would be the nursing care. And that means that you're unable to perform most of the activities of daily living. And so that's the nursing care kind of properties. And then the also memory care for Alzheimer's patients. And that would be for usually a lockdown facility. And again, each of these four facilities can be independent and standalone buildings. And sometimes it's continuing care with all four categories in one location. Vern, you have anything?
Well, we're not really doing anything with nursing care in our group. Mostly assisted living and memory care is what we deal with. We are exploring independent living, but nursing care is something that we've kind of stayed away from.
Okay, next slide. So to give you some idea of the value of real estate, there's 24,000, almost 25,000 investment grade properties out there. And these generally are going to be above 16 bedrooms. There are certain fair housing rules that apply to 16 and fewer resident properties. And actually, someone can start in a group home or assisted living home or memory care home in any neighborhood, in any HOA, without any change in zoning anywhere in the United States because it's covered under the federal fair housing. So just as you can't discriminate based on age or race, origin, things like that, the fair housing also covers the fact that a home in a residential neighborhood, if it's converted over to have adequate ADA bathrooms, fire extinguishing systems, things like that, it can be an assisted living and other types of group homes, which could be for sober living and things like that. But the investment grade properties are generally larger than that. And when you get above 100 bedroom places, you run into competition with the REITs that are trying to buy those. And they can be a good way to invest in the assisted living market, senior market. And then there's other alternatives to that. Obviously, smaller operators like us maybe have less overhead. But a total of 3.2 million bedrooms and the market value of almost $500 billion. So 72% of them are owned by private for-profit entities. 9% are owned by the REITs, and 2.8 are owned by publicly traded properties. And about 15% are operated by nonprofit entities. So now these fall under categories of Medicaid assisted or payment homes and also private pay, both of those categories. We found that investing in either of those can be profitable. Again, it depends on the operator. So, Vern, okay. So this is the real reason we think that assisted living and senior living housing is the wave of the future of where to put your money. You can see the growth rate of the people 80 and over. This does assume a certain amount of fatalities in here. And we got this information from a company called NIC. They specialize in getting information on the senior housing operators in most of the major cities, and then keep track of it in terms of the occupancy, wages, rent increases, and things like that. So it's an excellent source of information. So, Vern, would you like to say a few things?
Yeah, we used to say 10,000 people a day turn 65 years old, but that's gone up. It's closer to 15,000 people a day turn 65, and 4,000 people a day turn 85. That's every single day. So those are pretty exciting numbers from our perspective.
So again, that's just a graph to show the increase in population of these segments that we feel that it's a good idea to own real estate that serves this market. And so you can see it's increasing for the next, realistically 30, 40 years. So.
Can we go back that slide right? This one, this slide is exciting to me because as we look at that 75 to 85 plus population and how much it grows, we're almost to 2030 and you can see it goes up exponentially and we'll continue to do that until, it will do this until the end of the century. So it's pretty exciting to be in this space right now with those kind of demographics going on. Thank you.
Bert, you want to do this one?
Yeah, so not only do we see older people increasing, but the activities of daily life, the needs there, but the family caregivers are shrinking. So that adds to the need for these beds. It's not like you can keep mom at home. A lot of these families are now two-income families and don't have the ability to have somebody at home taking care of mom. So they you add that on top of the factor that the population is increasing, it really brings up the needs, which is kind of outlined there in that orange line there. So it's just a much bigger need that's coming up with those two factors.
Okay. Now, this was an interesting slide here. During the pandemic, occupancy dropped for a lot of reasons, not economic, but generally through people were concerned about taking their parents to an assisted living property. And in Colorado, they passed certain laws that made it difficult to have new people move in. So it was a 1 year kind of blip in the thing, but then since then, the absorption's been very good. Vern, you have any?
Oh, just the last 3 years, the occupancy rate is coming back to not only where it was before, but even increasing over what we had historically. And another interesting thing on that slide is you can see the inventory is going down. We have another slide in this deck that talks about the inventory, and that's a pretty exciting slide to me to have discussion about.
So the occupied units continue to climb to new record highs, both in terms of percentage and absolute amounts, and so it makes sense to be in that part of the market that's serving the increasing demand area. So next unit, next slide. Vern, you want to do this one?
Yeah, so sorry. So we've got the growth rate, and again, the inventory number is probably the biggest thing. You can see the inventory and how it was. That's the dark blue columns there, and the inventory rate, they kind of stopped building right after COVID. And it costs a lot to build new units these days. So it's really slowed down a lot. But with that said, the need is increasing. So we're going to see not only the increased need, but decreased supply. And that's going to have a pretty big effect on the rates moving forward and the value of these properties moving forward because it is all supply and demand. So, those two combinations put together have made us really bullish in this space. Next slide.
Okay. Yeah. So this shows the units under construction and as a percent of the inventory. And the important thing here is the construction is going down because the construction costs went up so much, and rents basically haven't increased to the point to where it makes it economically feasible. We feel it's a wise idea in your real estate investing in any category, no matter what it is, to try to buy an occupied property below replacement cost. And it is possible, although it does take a lot of searching, to do that in the senior market. But by buying the properties below replacement cost and having them occupied, that's a pretty simple idea in the real estate investing. So. And it is still possible here, but I think then we're going to see a increasing demand, which will put pressure on rents to go up to support new housing units. Vern, you want to do this one?
This goes back to what we were talking about with the construction and the fact that there's less going on, and you can see with that orange line that they're down to almost nil right now in new construction. So that's going to be very challenging moving forward with the needs that are coming up. And it kind of reinforces what we're saying here. The demand is ramping up and the pipeline's drying up. So, we have a little quote at the bottom. It's a textbook pricing power for any existing assets. And that's typically what we target is something that's already up and running.
Yeah, with the projection of 560,000 new bedrooms needed by 2030, but only 191,000 are projected, there's going to be a significant shortage, which will put pressure on the rents to be increased to the point that they can support new housing units to be built.
This
So
is the thing that excites me.
yeah, go ahead, Vern.
Okay. So if you look in the middle there, you're going to see a solid blue bar. And that is the most senior housing units that they've ever delivered in the history, in the 21st century at least. 56,000 units. So that's the most they've ever done. And the orange bars represent the need that's upcoming. You can see in 2027, there's almost 150,000 units that are needed. Their current development pace is at light blue bar at 26,000 units. So even if they built the most that they would have ever done, they still need over 200% of what that number is, and they're only at 25,000 units. So they need in 2027 almost six times what they're developing today. So that's a huge number. And that's why we think that the operators that are currently up and running can push their rents. They're going to see occupancy fill up to probably over 95% on average. Right now, they're probably in the 87 to 92%. And it's going to allow them a great opportunity that they can increase their rents, increase their occupancy, and really make some good profits out of these facilities. So this is why we think, to me, it's the most exciting slide of the deck.
And as we have on the slide there, zoning hurdles, it's not too hard to get the zoning. It's hard to get the final building built. In Colorado, due to certain regulations they've instituted, it takes a year after you get the building completely done and have an occupancy permit, the certificate of occupancy. It takes a year to get the license from the state before you can start filling it up. So those kind of restrictions make Colorado an attractive place to buy an existing building because competition is really stymied by the legislative rules that they've come up with. So, but we look for other states also just to be diversified. As I mentioned, we have about 42 homes, and that translates into how many beds, Vern?
That we have,
Yeah.
we're around 800.
So we feel that's a good statement for Colorado, but other states have good growth also, and those would be good to go to. So next slide. So
So
this shows the different categories of demographics and their net worth that they are projecting to be able to afford the assisted living properties. Most of the time, the seniors sell their home, which is paid for, and they have plenty of money to move into an assisted living for the rest of their life. There's really two categories that you'll look at when you investigate investing in assisted living. There are some companies that require a large deposit. $200,000 or $300,000 in some cases of one property here in Colorado. And it's still in the $7,000 to $8,000 a month range on top of that. They do get 90% of that money back after they've passed away or moved out. Within 3 months, they'll pay that to the heirs. But these are very nice places. They'll have five or six different restaurants available, but they're very, very large properties. We feel that having some experience with my own dad in a medium-sized facility, you get better care when it's not, 100 units and up. The 40 to 80 bed place is much better. We feel to give better service for the customer and for the resident. And let's be realistic, we got to keep the resident happy, otherwise you're not going to fill the place up. So next slide. Yeah. Bern, you can do this one.
Yeah, another thing that we like about this is how resilient. If you see that solid yellow line that goes through, that is the rent growth for senior housing compared to the other lines of rent growth. And you can see when we had the crash in 2008, how everybody, their rent growth went into the negative. And the senior housing, the only thing they did was not grow as much. So if you take the big one there, which was hotel, they were giving pretty big discounts over their rates, and same with industrial and apartments. Pretty much everybody went to the negative in growth, which means that if they were charging $100 and now they're charging $95, where the senior housing, if they were charging $100 before, then they went up to $103. So they didn't really lose any growth. They've continued to grow percentage-wise throughout the years, and we believe that trend's going to certainly continue based off of the demographics and the things we've shown you there. So it's probably, in our opinion, the most stable asset class that is available.
Okay. Next slide. So these are the cap rates of the assisted living properties. We feel that these are averages, and when you look for a property, you can look for some of them with these kind of cap rates, but with interest rates, although hopefully they'll be going down today, maybe. In the past, recent past, we were around 7% for the loans, and it's hard to make any money with a 7% loan, 25-year amortization, if your cap rate's 8.3. So when you look around for the properties, there's some that emphasize the growth, and having bought properties that were on the growth side, you don't get any cash flow for a while, but then the capital gains is substantial at the end. And it doesn't matter whether it's a mobile home park or assisted living property or self-storage, the same idea, it's still real estate. So when you're looking at these properties, try to figure out, are they really emphasizing the growth value, or are they is it going to be kind of a steady income property? And then fit that to whatever fits your investment goals. Okay, next slide. So we feel it makes sense to invest in this market because of strong demographic growth, much stronger than any other category. We're in Denver, and they're building lots of large apartment buildings, and already they're starting to see the vacancy creep up, and the rents having been stabilized, in some cases going down. Whereas with the assisted living, we're raising the rent and keeping the places full. So think about, what demographic do you want to appeal to, and then what city might be the best thing to invest in. With limited new supply, meaning because of construction costs and still interest rates are pretty high, and as compared to a few years ago. So that puts pressure on creating new properties for at much higher prices than you can buy an existing property for. And 16 qu consecutive quarters of occupancy improvement. I don't think you can find that statistic on any other type of real estate. Any other comments, Vern?
No, I no more on that one.
So we feel that the senior housing industry is both positioned for sustained growth and performance driven by demographic improvements and favorable supply and demand dynamics. So I hope you found this educational. And if you would like more information from us on any type of senior living, we have this available. You can scan that and we can get in touch with you to talk about any individual questions that you may have. And we look forward to adding to your information so you can make a wise investment with your IRA funds and help that money grow.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for that presentation, for that information. I think it's about time we can start the Q&A section.
Okay.
But it looks like we have a little bit more information about just opening up an account with us here at the InTrust Group first off. So yeah, just as the slide says, if you'd like to get started with opening an account, first thing is to fill out an application to open up the account, put money into it, and then direct the custodian, which is the InTrust Group, to purchase the investment, all of which is paperwork that we will, of course, be able to assist you with if you have any questions about that. So now that the presentation is finished and we have, you're going to start the next, the Q&A section, but we will be sending a replay and additional resources. We'll have a follow-up email, and you can register for October's webinar next month. And here's our social medias and our website information for additional information. All right, and so without further ado, here's our contact information. Just go ahead and read some of the questions here that were asked during the presentation, and if anybody has any additional questions, please feel free to just type that into the appropriate section. We'll call them out. So this is for Andrew. Will this slide deck be available to attendees after today's presentation? Yeah, that so looks like that person might have already left, but yes, this is going to be made available to everybody, and the replay of this presentation will also be on YouTube and will be available on our website as well. The next question, though, is what is the geographic distribution of demand across the U.S.? So, Vern and Jim, do you guys have any insights on that?
Well, we like to rely on the information that we get from the NIC organization. We do pay $20,000 a year to get this information, and it's and we've concentrated on five states. We've concentrated on Texas, Arizona, Nevada, Colorado, and also Georgia. And based on the information that we have from them, those seem to be the best states. Certainly Florida would be good, but we are concerned about the insurance issues down there. Having had properties in Mobile, Alabama, and subject to the hurricane program for the last 20 years, and insurance issues with all of that. We've just decided to stay away from Florida, but I think the other states that I just mentioned are good. Certainly, the Pacific Northwest is a lot of growth up there also, and the assisted living properties are doing well in Washington and Oregon, but they have really restricted current operations and future buildings with regulations that are very difficult to operate a business with. So, but You can always check out through various websites what states are having the growth of different of the senior demographic group. So.
Thank you very much, Jim. Next question. You spent a lot of time covering the demand. I'd like to know how you guys invest the money. Are you buying, building, and converting?
Well, we did that when we started 15 years ago. We bought single-family homes and converted those to assisted living and rented the properties to operators. With the price of homes going up, we did that for about 5 years, 5 or 6 years, and then the home prices went up so much it wasn't economically feasible anymore. So we tend to buy two types of properties. One that needs some fix-up work. We recently purchased one in Scottsdale, Arizona for $6 million. And that has how many beds, Vern?
It is 106 beds and 94 units.
So if you figure, that's like $60,000 a bed, and which is a bargain price in any world. And but we've also spent an additional $2 million for some improvements to the property. But even so, 80,000 a bed, it's still a very good below market price. Now, on the other hand, we have purchased properties for up to 150,000 a bed, but we do feel that because they're fully occupied, the condition of the property, and the fact that these buildings are replacement cost of the buildings are in the 180 to 220,000, we feel it's still a good real estate investment.
Higher on the replacement cost, Jim. 250 to 350 is what the new construction is.
Yeah.
There you have it. Next question is, how did you operate your properties during COVID?
Well, all of our properties are leased to the operators, and so our operators, for the most part, were able to comply with the state regulations and federal regulations and at least maintain an occupancy. The state did make it difficult to move in new people. They basically wouldn't let anybody tour a property. So our property managers, I mean our tenants, our operators, that had excellent websites with tours on the websites of the properties, did okay. The other operators that had a more basic website that didn't have good pictures of the inside struggled quite a bit. And but a few of our operators did figure out some legitimate ways around some of the rules and were able to continue on. For the most part, our operators paid the rent to us, even though their occupancy did drop. We did have one operator that had four properties, and she ran into not only those problems, but some significant health problems, and did shortly after all that pass away. So, that's why we're looking to buy larger buildings that we can have property managers run so we aren't dependent on one operator.
The next question, in your financial models, how long is the typical hold time and when do you start distributing?
Well, up until now, that we've kind of shifted towards the property management idea, all of the properties were leased and we had distributions usually 2 or 3 months, starting 2 or 3 months after we buy the property. And then we make distributions every other month after that. The operators have an option to buy the property from us after 3 years. And we have them sign a 10-year lease, but they can buy it from us after 3 years. Most of our operators do buy the property from us after 3 years because our rent is higher than what their payment is, and they can get an SBA owner-occupied, owner-run property loan, And so their terms on their loans can be more favorable than our loans. So it is an incentive for them to improve the property and improve the operation of the property. So therefore, the property appraises for substantially more. And then they can use that difference between the value and our option price for their equity portion for the loan. So usually in 3 years, if people do want out, the building's being sold. Some of the funds we have multiple buildings in it. So, but if somebody wants out, it's been relatively easy to get people back their full investment. And because we set these up to be income producing partnerships, there hasn't been a big increase in value in the properties. So, because the option price is going to be about 10% more than what we bought the property for. And so the overall returns can be pretty good. I know we aren't supposed to get into all that right now, but that's our philosophy. But we are looking to buy some buildings that and have a property manager. They get a substantial fee, but then we get all the upside when the building's sold.
Excellent. Another simple question. Are funds deposited to your group insured?
No.
They are not. Well, there we have it. Next question is, what is the return they expect? Can you give any sort of information about that?
Okay. Well, when we buy the building and do the triple net lease, we set it up to be somewhere in that 9 to 10% cash flow range. And so that's what we shoot for. In the past, we have had some operators run into other problems, especially if they were a Medicaid building and they didn't operate the buildings properly. And so in some cases, we've had cash flow as low as 6% for a period of time until we replace that operator and get things back on track. But we have several operators that are running several buildings under Medicaid, and they're able to pay the rent that we anticipated that's on the lease, and they're able to give the partners a 10% return. So.
Here's a logistical question. What are the dollar amounts you're looking for investors to put towards your project? Is there a minimum?
Yeah, usually it's 25,000, and on most of them, we do have a couple right now that it's a larger property, so we're requiring a minimum of 50,000.
Minimum of 50.
Yeah, so between 25 to 50, so.
So we have question. Next question is, assisted living locations might have inadequate nurse or other caregiver staff. Is this a concern for your locations?
Yes, it certainly is. Obviously, you have to have the staff to be able to work it right. And in the cities that we're in, they're big enough cities that there are adequate population to draw from to get the staffing that is needed. So if there are, we look at lots of properties that are in towns of less than, say, 25, 30,000 people, and we don't pursue those at all because we know it's just too small of an economic base to draw the staff from, and then too small of a group to draw from for the residents. So we stick with towns that are at least 100,000, but I think right now most of ours are in the 500,000 and up range.
Next question. What is the average bed size for your homes?
Well, we have quite a few left over from our early years that are in the 16 bed range. But in the last, I'd say, what, 4 years, Vern, we've been in the 30, 60, the Scottsdale ones, 100 beds. One in Las Vegas we're working on now is licensed for 80 beds. Is it Vern?
Yeah,
Vern here in
64
the
units, license for 80.
80. And so, but like I said during the presentation, that we like the 40 to 80 bed range. I think it serves the residents better because the staff gets to know the people, and the buildings aren't so big that people get lost walking around them and things like that. So.
We have somebody ask, what are some criteria you consider in setting up operations?
Well, the first thing is, what's the building like? Is it adequate room size? Does it have adequate meeting rooms, kitchen facilities, dining rooms, and the overall condition and age of the building? It's an older building, then we're going to be looking at probably replacing air conditioning and major HVAC kind of components. So we take that in consideration when we make the offer to purchase the building. If it's a newer building, this one in Las Vegas is only 7 years old, so we aren't looking for any major repairs right around the corner, certainly by the time it's 10 years old, but we set money aside for that. The other criteria would be the size of the population of the property's located in. And where it's located, we like to try to find a building that is close to the upper income areas and upper home value areas, thinking that the adult children probably live there and they'd like to have easy access to their parents. So.
The question is the future investment per location or into a fund has been asked.
We do it both ways. Sometimes we'll have a fund for one building, and sometimes we do retain the option to add other properties to the fund. Our oldest fund probably has 15 buildings or something. Vern, you think REO's about 15 or?
Yeah, somewhere in that range. We've sold some and we've acquired some.
Yeah. So our operators buy these after 3 years and they want another building. So we use the money from the sale of that building to that operator to buy another building for that same operator. He's got a track record with us. The banks are happy with him. And sometimes we change areas, but generally we've stayed in the same area that they were currently in. So that's kind of our formula. Being a small operator like this, we have annual meetings, and although we do appreciate our partners very much, we do take them to a Rockies game. So, it's hard to say you appreciate somebody having them go to a Rockies game lately, but that's our idea. And then we do have annual meetings, and but I've got investors, Dr. Larry's been with me since 85. That is 1985. I would like to emphasize that. We've had investors with us for a long time, and they're happy with our returns. And so, but if the building's more for the an upside thing, we probably would make it a standalone building. And then, when that building sells, we'll give the people the option to take their money, or we can roll it over into another building. So,
We have another question. What is the profitability of investments in your business? I think that was answered in a previous question. You shoot for around 10% is the projected, yes?
well, yeah, the our fees are we usually get a 3 to 5% real estate commission. And then there's other fees, obviously loan fees, appraisal, all that kind of stuff. And the price that the operator can buy the property from us for after 36 months is usually 10% higher than our original price. And of course, we paid the loan down a little bit. So that way, the overall return we shoot for is a 12 to 14 internal rate of return. If they take longer, which some of them do, the price goes up every year, and to help cover all those costs and give us a little bit better return.
Somebody asks, how do you find operators, and are there an abundance of people that want to be operators?
Let me answer the last one first. Yes, there are an abundance, and most of them are not qualified. So it is hard to find them. Usually, we find a building that's running well, and we'll contact that executive director, and we will say, "Do you know if that owner wants to buy another building?" And they may or may not. But then we bring up the idea at that point, have you ever thought of having your own building? And when we explain the program that without too much money out of their pocket, and in some cases, no money, we turn the building over to them as long as they've got some working capital. We turn the building over to them, and within a few years, they can become a millionaire. Our best example is Mitch and Jennifer started with us 9 years ago. They had two buildings. Today, they have 24 buildings, 550 beds, and 450 employees. All the buildings that they've acquired and operate today were through our program. So we try to help people that otherwise could not ever own a building on their own to own a building. And we also want to make sure that the residents are taken care of. So we feel it's a win-win kind of thing to help operators that are qualified and putting up with the state, the adult children, the staffing issues, the ordering the food, and taking on all of that responsibility and giving them a chance to literally become a millionaire. The property we bought in Scottsdale, about a year ago for Mitch and Jennifer. We bought for $6 million. We spent $2 million on it, so their option price is like $8.5 or $9 million. But it appraised for $13 million when it was fully stabilized and some of these repairs were done. So they stand to make, $3 or $4 million off of that one building due to our program, and we're thrilled. They make their rent payments on time, and they deserve the reward for that hard work. So, and let me just add, if we can't find an operator and we have a good building, that's when we pursue a professional manager that has experience in that neighborhood and that type of property.
And we have somebody else asking, what do you expect for average annual profit margin per home? So it seems.
Well, I think we can still, given that 9 to 10% cash flow, maybe there's going to be a little increase. So if we start at 9, we get up to 10 by the third year, and then the overall return should be in that 12% range.
That's on our triple net lease program.
Yeah, with the professional managers, I mean, if we would have bought that building in Scottsdale on our own, we would have had no cash flow for the first year. But now that it's starting to get stabilized and the rents have been adjusted to market, that difference between what we've got into it of the 8 million, 8.5 million, and the ultimate sale price would go to the partner. So.
And somebody asked, what amount of investment are you requesting? What is the return? And what is the collateral? I believe in a previous question, you mentioned that you were looking for a minimum investment of 25,000 to 50,000, correct?
Correct.
All right. And then what is the return? Where again, we're talking about somewhere between 9 and 10%, and the overall return probably about 12%, I believe you said, correct?
Correct. And then if we do the property manager, we probably would have more on the upside, but less initially. So.
Okay. And then what is the collateral? Do you have any answer to that question?
Well, they are in a partnership that is entitled to the property. So they aren't buying stock in a company. They have direct ownership of the partnership that owns the property. So
Have it. Are the units typically new build or remodeling of existing homes?
Well, 15 years ago we did the remodeling, but now and converting homes. Now it's more of paint, new flooring, new lighting, maybe out something on the outside. But the property in Scottsdale was unusual that we spent $2 million on a $6 million property. Most of the time we'll spend $200,000 or $300,000 on a $4 to $6 million building. Property in Las Vegas is 13 million, and I don't know where it would spend a dollar. It's in excellent condition, so.
Then somebody asked, do you have a prospectus or investment thesis, and how do we get one?
Well, if you contact us, we'll send it to you. And we
There
do
you
have
have
an
it.
offering memorandum currently.
Right. And then, the contact information for both Vern and Jim is there on the front slide. So that's how you can contact them by email or by phone to get that. All right, and here's an interesting one. Are there any tax advantages to this type of real estate investment other than those already provided by the IRA construct as compared to other types of investments such as oil and gas, intangible drilling cost write-downs? Now, that is a question that should be directed to your CPA or tax advisor. That's not something we can really discuss here, unfortunately. But yeah, the main tax advantage of investing through an IRA is depending on the type of IRA you have, whether traditional as tax deferred investment value or Roth as post-tax investment value, tax-free on the income you receive on the income from the investment. As long as you satisfy the 5-year rule and other minimum requirements for Roth IRAs. But for the other sort of intangibles, like the sort of depreciation of the investment that sometimes happens in oil and gas investments, that is a question for you to take to a CPA or tax advisor for strategy questions like that. Next question. This is probably going to be for you, Jim. Is there a separate LLC for each building? Would the investment be building specific? And I think we've covered that a little bit previously. Yes.
Yes, it depends. Some of them are individual buildings and some of them are a fund. So we do both.
Next question. How many properties have you bought and sold?
Well, we have 42 or three now, and we probably had. Burn, do you have a better idea on that?
I'd say 80 to 100 total between.
Yeah, now we do brokerage work, so sometimes we have a client that wants to buy a building on their own. And so we help them do that, and then we help them get a manager. And sometimes we manage the manager, and sometimes the people want to do it themselves. So because people might want to trade a rental house in or something, and then that doesn't work on an IRA, so they'll just buy a building on their own. So, yeah, I would say, and over 15 years, it's probably been close to 100 that we have bought or helped a client buy and then sold. I don't know how many, 40 or 30 of those or something, because some of them went to the clients.
Next question. How is the overall investment split between the three categories, independent, AL, MC, etc.?
The potential return would be the same. We do have one property that's has independent living and assisted living and memory care on it. Doesn't have nursing home, but we do have some independent living. The returns are pretty much the same. I don't think if we did categories, I don't think one would be out more outstanding than the other. You've got a building to maintain in either case. But less staffing on independent living, so that's a potential plus there. But of course, you have much higher rents on assisted living than you do on independent living. So.
And then the last question that we have on the list here, do you ever start with a strategically located infill land parcel and do a ground-up construction project?
No. It takes too long to get the zoning, too long to get the building. And when we can buy the building at, 50% of replacement cost and it's generally full, why build something? I mean, there's no economic reason. I couldn't make a good economic case to investors to have them give me the money, to do that. Plus, I have no hair left to go through a building program, so.
All right. We have a little. Oh, we have another question. We have an appreciation of, I appreciate your time today. So, likewise, Jim and Vern, we appreciate you guys coming on. Looks like our audience is also appreciative. One other question, though. Do you convert hotels?
No.
No.
Probably a possibility that that might work if you could find one cheap enough in a in the right neighborhood. But it is, you'd have to have all the bathrooms be independent, be ADA approved. Now some of the states require elevators to be big enough for a gurney laying flat. And some of the elevators for hotels wouldn't be, or motels wouldn't be big enough. And trying to redo a elevator would be a nightmare. So I used to have to add one on the end of the building or something. I think that would just be a lot, just again, let's just buy a building that's mostly occupied at a good price.
All right, and that was the last question currently. Oh, here we go. Alex Mdadi coming in. If you ever consider converting hotels, I know a great opportunity in Southern California. Well, there we go. We have a little bit of information there.
Yeah, well, have them send it to us. We hate to say no without looking at something, but maybe it's a possibility. So,
Okay, anybody else? Going once, going twice. And Alex says he'd be more than glad to send you information. But if there is any, there's no more questions, I believe we've reached the end of our Q&A session.
okay. I'd just like to say, and I should have done that in the beginning, that I've used you guys for my IRA and I've had other IRA companies and you guys are much better to work with. We refer quite a bit of business to you guys too from people that are dissatisfied with the other IRA companies. So,
And we appreciate that, Jim.
yeah.
So, Jim and Vern, we thank you again for, and Alex, looking here, you need their information, Vern and Jim's information, as well as mine, if you ever want to get in touch with me and ask questions, is available on the screen here. You can email or give us a call, whatever is more convenient for you. But without further ado, if there's no further questions, Vern and Jim, thank you very much again for giving this information to for us today.
Thank
And
you, Jacob.
everybody, thank you for attending.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.